Greetings and welcome back to another episode of Control Alt Army, stories from cyberspace, where we talk with senior Army leaders about why cybersecurity and cyber operations are commander's business. I'm pleased to introduce my guest today, Lieutenant General Laura Potter. She is the Director of the Army Staff. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Well, thank you, Michael. It's a pleasure to be here.
Can we, before we get to the nerd stuff and technology and cybersecurity, we'd love to hear what motivated you to join the Army?
So that's a great question. I actually didn't grow up with a desire to join the Army. My brother went to West Point, and I had plans to be a high school Russian and Spanish language teacher.
Really?
And my brother encouraged me to serve my country for a few years, and I came in as an intelligence officer in 1989. And immediately fell in love with both the Army and the intelligence discipline, which I'll talk about later because it's so important with today's topic.
Gotcha. Did you grew up studying and learning some Russian?
I did. I grew up in the Cold War, and many of the listeners probably did not grow up in the Cold War. They don't know what that felt like. But I really wanted to make sure that we had a base of properly trained Russian speakers in our country, and I wanted to help with that.
Got it. I confess I actually studied some Russian myself in college, so it's been a wonderful thing to be able to try to keep up with on Duolingo. So I try to use technology to keep up a little bit with my language. So as we think about how technology is affecting the Army and future leaders in the Army, it'd be great if you could reflect back on some of your earliest assignments in the service. What did the technology landscape look like at that point, just in terms of threats, but also how the Army was or was not embracing technology at that time?
So I think, coming into the Army in the late 80s and early 90s, really the Army had not embraced what we could now talk about as wanting to become a data-centric army. We were just lucky to have computers in our headquarters. We were starting to navigate through how to do our staff processes that used to be analog into a more networked fashion, and it was really a very incremental process. Really probably the formative point for me in terms of appreciating the technology was after 9/11 and my first assignment, my first deployment to Iraq in OIF-1, where we had to establish a network that could deliver an effects process. We had to establish a multinational network. And we began for the first time to really appreciate how the cyberspace, the cyber domain was being weaponized. We stood up this effort called Countering the Adversary Use of the Internet, an unfortunate acronym we called COWIE at the time. And those were really the nascent parts of my experience in really understanding that this is a constant contest between good and bad in the cyberspace domain.
For those who are interested in maybe reading a little more about COWIE, as I recall, former NSA director and CIA director Michael Hayden has written a little bit about it in his memoir that was cleared for official publication by his former employers. So that's a safe source to go to for those in the audience who want to hear more about COWIE and what was going on at that time. Did the service offer you any formal training or exposure through PME or other types of experiences to equip you to see what was happening and how the internet was changing the course of the conflict at that time?
So I would say certainly in my company grade years, we did not. I went to Command and General Staff College the year before 9/11, so I graduated right before 9/11, the 9/11 attacks. And we were certainly exposed to some very basic fundamental ideas back then, but the Army was nowhere near at a point where we were embracing multi-domain thinking. I was exposed to some of it in my intelligence jobs that I had, which allowed me to take courses that touched on this, a couple of ad hoc courses that were oriented towards how we think about this in the joint context, but not really something in formal PME. And so I'm proud of this effort, and I'm proud of what our PME schoolhouses are doing to at least try to expose our leaders, particularly at the field grade level, to the importance of studying this.
One of the things that strikes me about being with the Army these days, I'm so impressed by how many senior people make the time for their own continuing education by listening to podcasts or reading books about AI or any of the other emerging technologies just on their own time. Do you feel like for your cohort and your colleagues that you've also seen a greater embrace of sort of on your own studying and learning about these kinds of evolutions?
I absolutely do. Yeah. And I would commend to anybody, in the old days when you thought about reading lists, we used to categorize, in my mind, reading lists into a couple bins. So there was sort of fundamental leadership books you might read. And then we would talk about books you ought to read so you understood Russia or China and their ways of war. But really, almost every senior leader I know has a book on their physical or virtual book stand right now that is related to the cyber domain. It is either the various things that deal with mis and disinformation in cyberspace, things that have to do with how we will use AI and machine learning to our advantage. So I absolutely encourage everyone to do that. And then for those that are more interested in more of the technical aspects of this, there's some really good courses that you can take advantage of on Coursera that I believe are free to service members if they want to pursue some of that more technically oriented education. And then lastly, the Chief of Staff of the Army has us looking into piloting some courses, a course at the War College for senior leaders to make data-driven decisions in warfighting. And those should nest with some broader courses that are available at places like Carnegie Mellon and MIT and other places across the U.S.
That's terrific, and I'm just so impressed that our Army's leaders, our senior-most leaders, are putting the time in to actually experiment with what those kinds of educational initiatives should be for the rest of the force and for the rest of the general officers and also for senior civilians. And so I think that mix of using the Army's existing institutions like the War College, but also the relationships with Carnegie Mellon and others is a great model that the service is using. When you're thinking about, I could take you back into your previous jobs a little bit, is there an episode or two when either you were in command or you were proximate to someone who was in command and it really hit home about the role of technology and cyber operations or cybersecurity in the context of a true operation, something yeah. going on other than, not just, hey, the email's down and, let's get right. the network running, but whoa, this is really commander's business.
Yes. So I think this is such an important point. And really to all of our listeners, no matter what kind of formation you're commanding and whether you are the commander or on the staff, what we do in the cyber domain, cyber operations, cyber defense, are part of commander business all across the Army. And I'm just going to give a couple examples. I talked about the nascent COWIE efforts in Iraq and Afghanistan. I won't talk about those, although we matured tremendously over the years in being able to deliver effects to degrade an adversary's either disinformation campaign or their capabilities. But the examples I want to give, so I was the G2 of U.S. Army Europe after the first Russia-Ukraine war. And I went from there to being the UCOM J2, working for General Scaparotti down in Stuttgart. And after the first Russia-Ukraine war, we studied what Russia did in the cyber domain to set conditions for how quickly they took Crimea. We also watched what Russia did to degrade the energy grid in Ukraine, to wage a massive mis- and disinformation campaign when NATO stood up its enhanced forward presence forces in the Baltics and Poland. And so we had to put mechanisms in place in both U.S. Army Europe and then down at UCOM to study what the adversary was doing to us at the high-end things like attacking energy grids to what I would call the lower-end, technologically-wise, lower-end things like mis- and disinformation. So we had to have an entire effects process in our headquarters so we could understand what the adversary was doing and then decide what, if anything, we wanted to do to defend our networks, to counter a false narrative, or to assist allies and partners in protecting their grids or their infrastructure. And that I learned so much about the comprehensive nature that any staff has to understand this to support their commander.
That's a powerful example. It would strike me that the lessons that were learned from that time proved pretty instructive for Russia's most current invasion of Ukraine.
It did. And what I would say, and I think, you know, anyone going out into a command or a staff where you are oriented against a major peer adversary, you will quickly learn that in the cyber domain, we are in contact on a daily basis, whether that's attacks against our networks or, as I mentioned, everything going on in the information space. And it takes a different way of thinking on the staff, meaning our staff processes might be the same, how we do military decision making, how we generate orders, et cetera. But thinking about what the adversary is doing in the cyber domain and what we need to do to counter that is new territory for some officers in our Army. And we really have to become experts in it, just as we are when we think about a kinetic strike or any other sort of effect we might want to generate. So I think that's really important. If I segue to my time as the G2 of the Army. So now I'm going to take it from an operational setting like Europe to what we do in the institution, because all of those commanders and staff are equally as important in this category. So in that regard, it is really about an adversary's ability to conduct cyber espionage and intellectual property theft as we modernize our military. And for all the billions of dollars we're spending in modernization, it will be for naught if we allow an adversary to steal our intellectual property or try to outmatch us based on the technology they can take advantage of. The fact that adversaries can pose a threat to our critical infrastructure ought to inform how garrison commanders and senior commanders on all of our installations think about things like good old-fashioned physical security and cybersecurity that together are important to a healthy defense of our networks and our installations. So really, whether you're in the operating force, the institutional base, the generating force, your role in understanding everything going on in the cyber domain and how you either influence, protect, defend, or be part of an effects process is really important.
Those are two powerful examples. It strikes me, you know, when you're talking about modernization, you know, that's another community that when we've talked so much about having a cyber branch and these cyber people, but also we're also talking about the acquisition corps, right, who has to learn about how to better protect their programs, you know, interactions with scientists doing early research and development, you know, and so I really appreciate your points about how this concerns so many different communities within the Army, not just the 17s or not just, you know, the Signal or MI Corps.
That is absolutely true. And I think, you know, if you think of our 20 years of counterterrorism experience, we didn't worry about an adversary approaching us from that threat vector based on the kinds of things we were producing and the enemy that we were focused on. And so when you think about the priorities given to us in the National Defense Strategy, many of those states can reach our shores in the cyber domain and do reach our shores in the cyber domain on a daily basis. So we have to change our way of thinking in terms of the culture of the Army and be mindful that, you know, anything that we put on unclassified networks is vulnerable. What we talk about is analyzed in other countries' capitals from an open source perspective. And so we really have to take a holistic approach at how we're defending our networks and all the information that resides on them.
That's a very clear message, and it's a message that certainly resonates with me, so I think I'm just going to have this podcast on my phone wherever I go and play it if I encounter resistance and say, don't take my word for it. The DAS said so herself. Let me just ask one final question, if I may. You know, and I think for folks, again, more junior officers or others in the audience thinking about their careers and their career evolution, how to get noticed by senior leaders for a top job or a next shot at a big promotion. What are you looking for when you're talent scouting for your own teams? Are you looking for, you know, for coders? Are you looking for other skills? It'd be great to hear you reflect on that.
Yeah, so I think, you know, the foundational ideas in our leadership doctrine of competence, character, and commitment, those are true and they transcend any profession you have in the Army. So certainly looking for people who are very good at what they do. And that could be any branch you're in, any functional area you are in, any job we intend to send you to, whether it's in your career field or what we would call a branch immaterial or stretch assignment. But germane to the topic of today's podcast, if we are really going to embrace the Secretary of the Army's objective of becoming data-centric and the Chief's priorities when he thinks about warfighting formations, the data centricity of our Army extends from our most sophisticated enterprise business systems to our oldest enterprise business systems to our legacy and enduring weapons systems and networks to where we're headed with modernization. And if we don't figure out a way to ensure that all of our men and women have a baseline level of expertise in this area, I think we won't be able to realize the potential that we all envision. So that data centricity means it doesn't matter what part of the Army you're in. If you feel you're not smart enough in this area, you need to seek some classes, do some self-development, so that wherever you're plugging into the Army, you can be part of this effort to make us more data-centric, which includes not only how we operate, but how we defend ourselves.
I think that's a great message for folks to hear, that they don't just, not everyone needs to become a data scientist, you know, to get noticed in the Army of today or tomorrow, but excellence in whatever field you're bringing to the table, and then assimilating that kind of knowledge, being the best in that field to keep up with what's going on technology. I think that's a great message.
Well, and I think it can be intimidating if you're not smart in this space. I mean, I would recommend to anyone get to that job, assess what aspects of this do you maybe not understand as well as others, and seek resources. There are people that will help you. There are courses you can take. There's books you can read on your own. And it's really important to the Army. So there's a lot of resources we're trying to make available to people to do that.
I was very lucky. You know, I had no friends in eighth grade, so I helped build the computer lab and these sorts of things. But for those who did have friends in middle school and growing up, you know, I've never met anybody around the Pentagon or in senior national security leadership who won't stop and, if asked, say what they're reading and right. say what's on their mind about how they're thinking about their own education. They may not pour their heart out about it, you know, for 20 minutes, but for a minute or two, yeah, I think people will make the time if someone who's legitimately and genuinely curious and wants to learn, they'll make the time to help.
Yep, I agree.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for joining us, General Potter. What a pleasure to have you on the show. For folks in the audience, she is our Director of the Army Staff. Thanks for sharing the stories about why cyber operations and cybersecurity matter for the Army's leaders and not just the technical community. For folks in the audience, we hope you've enjoyed, and we want to give a special thanks to our executive producer, Sergeant First Class L'Oreal McNeil, and our creative director, Jasmine Manigo. Of course, our wonderful friends also at the AMVID team here at the Pentagon. We look forward to having you join us for another episode soon.